Hey, everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. You know, today we're going to be jumping into 1 Kings.
Ooh.
1 Kings chapter 1, and we're looking at King David's succession and all the drama that surrounded that. And we've got Dr. John Oswalt. He's going to be kind of our guide through this.
He's a good guide.
Through this deep dive, so get ready for some ancient history.
Yeah, lots of good stuff here.
We've got secret meetings and power struggles and even a surprising connection to water.
Yes.
So have you ever wondered, like, how did leadership transition back in those times?
Right.
Well, buckle up, because we're going back to the world of kings and prophets.
The high stakes.
Where the stakes were very high.
Well, what's so interesting is that, you know, the transfer of powers wasn't always like a neat and tidy process, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like in this case, you've got two contenders.
Okay.
Adonijah, he's David's eldest surviving son.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got Solomon.
Okay.
Another son who had actually been promised the kingship. So right there, that already sets the stage for a power struggle.
Wow.
That reveals a lot about, you know, ambition.
Loyalty.
Yeah. And the role of divine authority.
Yeah, so it's Adonijah who kind of tries to pull a fast one here.
He does. He does.
He knows Solomon's the rightful heir, but David's getting older. He's weakening.
Right.
And so he decides to throw himself a coronation ceremony at Enrattle.
Oh.
Now, Enrattle is a spring just outside of Jerusalem.
Interesting.
And I'm thinking, okay, a spring, like, what's the big deal?
You're right. What's the significance?
Well, like, I get it. You need water to survive, but...
Exactly.
But, like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, you're thinking scenery, right?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
a pretty backdrop for this, you know, political move.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out springs were vital back then, you know, especially in a dry land like ancient Israel.
Right.
They represented order and stability,
the
power to sustain life in this really harsh environment.
Okay.
So by choosing a spring for this ceremony, Adonijah was really strategically trying to align himself with these powerful symbols.
Oh, so it's like a power move.
Totally. It's like he's saying, hey, look at me. I'm the source of life and prosperity.
Wow.
I'm the guy, you know, I'm the guy who could bring order to the kingdom.
That's fascinating. But wait a minute. Didn't David already promise to someone else that they would be king?
He swore an oath to Bathsheba.
Yeah.
Solomon's mother.
Yeah.
That Solomon would be the one.
Right.
And vow keeping wasn't just good manners back then.
Yeah.
It reflected God's own covenant keeping nature.
Okay.
So breaking a vow wasn't just a personal betrayal.
Mm.
It was a breach of trust that could disrupt like the social and even cosmic order.
Wow. That's intense. It's like, so breaking a vow back then wasn't just like, oops, my bad. I changed my mind.
No, not at all.
It makes you think about how today, like, our society, how much do we actually value keeping our word?
It's true.
And how does that affect everything from like our personal relationships to like international agreements?
Absolutely. And so when Nathan the prophet comes in,
okay,
he reminds David of the oath that he made to Bathsheba.
Mm-hmm.
And David snaps into action, even though he's, you know, in his weakened state.
Right.
He calls upon this powerful trio.
Okay.
Zadok the priest.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan the prophet and Benaiah, who is a military commander, to ensure that Solomon ascends the throne.
Okay.
And these figures, they represent the religious, the prophetic, and the military authority of the entire kingdom.
So they're like the big three.
They are the big three.
And they're coming together to make sure that Solomon is the next king.
Yes. And it's almost like a foreshadowing of that threefold authority that we see in Jesus later on.
Okay.
King, prophet, and priest all wrapped up in one.
I like it. I like it. Right. So we've got this convergence of power and divine authority, and it's all kind of coming to a head to make sure that Solomon takes the throne.
Yeah.
But where does this pivotal coronation take place?
Oh, I know. You know.
At another spring.
Of course, at another spring.
Of course.
This time it's the Gihon spring.
Okay.
Which is much larger and way more significant than Enrogel.
All right. So you've got an upgrade here.
It's an upgrade.
Yeah.
It's like, the location itself emphasizes the weight of this event.
Mm-hmm.
The flow of power shifting from one spring to another.
Whoa, I like.
From the usurper to the rightful heir.
So it makes you think about like how people throughout history have used, you know, symbols and location to solidify their power and their authority.
At the time.
Like even today.
Yes.
Think about all the symbolism that's packed into political rallies or like presidential inaugurations.
Exactly. Symbols matter.
Yeah, they do.
And this image of water.
Right.
Symbolizing life and order flowing from the king.
Mm-hmm.
It connects to something deeper that we see all throughout the Bible,
okay,
culminating in Jesus' words in the Gospel of John,
okay,
where he talks about rivers of living water
flowing from those who believe in him.
Yeah.
Because a spiritual reality that transcends,
wow,
these earthly power struggles.
That's amazing. So I'm seeing a theme here. I'm seeing that water seems to hold a lot of significance in these stories, both as like a physical necessity,
right,
but also as the symbol of something much greater.
Absolutely.
But while Solomon's getting crowned at this grand spring,
yeah,
what's going on with Adonijah?
Oh, he's not happy.
I bet he's like fuming.
Oh, yeah. He hears about the coronation.
Yeah.
And he panics. And he does something pretty desperate.
What's he do?
He runs to the altar in the tabernacle.
Okay.
And grabs hold of the horns.
The horns.
The horns.
Okay.
And those horns weren't just decoration.
Okay.
These symbolized a place of refuge for unintentional sins.
All right.
A last-ditch effort to avoid punishment.
So it's like saying sanctuary.
Exactly.
I mess up. Please spare me. Spare me.
So what does Solomon do? Well, you'd think that, you know, he'd order his brother's execution right there on the spot.
Yeah, that seems like the thing to do.
Right. I mean, this was a challenge to his claim to the throne.
Yeah.
But he shows this surprising amount of restraint.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He tells Adonijah that if he proves himself worthy,
okay,
he'll be spared.
Wow. That's merciful.
It's very merciful.
Yeah.
Especially in contrast to the ruthless ambition that we see in Adonijah.
Right.
And so many other rulers of the ancient world.
So at least at this point, Solomon is really displaying some incredible wisdom and grace.
He is. He is.
Wow. What a twist.
It's a good twist.
This whole story is just getting more and more intriguing.
Yeah.
We've got power struggles, symbolic locations.
A little bit of divine intervention.
A dash of divine intervention.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now mercy.
Yeah, mercy.
I'm hooked.
Me too. Me too.
But Dr. Oswalt brings up this question, and it's something that I've been thinking about too.
Okay.
What does all this tell us about how God works? Especially in these messy human situations.
Good question.
Like this one.
That's a great question. And it leads us to some fascinating insights.
Ooh.
About human nature, leadership, and even the surprising ways God can work through,
yeah,
our flaws and our choices. We're going to have to save that discussion for part two of this deep dive.
Looking forward to it.
Me too.
Sounds good.
All right. You know, it's interesting how this story doesn't shy away from highlighting human flaws.
Right.
Even in a figure like David.
Right.
Dr. Oswalt points out that David's reluctance to firmly address his son's rivalry,
yeah,
well, it actually played a part in creating this whole mess.
So even a leader like David, wow, known for his strength and wisdom, he had shortcomings.
He did.
It's kind of reassuring in a way.
It is. In a way, it is.
Yeah.
Because it reminds us that leadership isn't about being perfect.
Right.
It's about navigating these complex situations.
Yeah.
And making the best choices you can.
Right.
With the information you have at the time.
Mm, yeah. And David's passivity, kind of his hope that things would just work themselves out,
yeah,
ultimately contributed to the chaos.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Yeah. It's a reminder that sometimes avoiding difficult conversations,
mm-hmm,
can lead to bigger problems down the line.
Absolutely.
It's like saying what you permit, you promote.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Ignoring a problem doesn't make it go away.
Right.
And sometimes it just allows it to fester and grow.
Yes, true.
But this also ties into a larger theme that we see in the Bible, right?
Yes.
The consequences of sin.
Yes.
Even for those who are considered heroes of the faith.
Exactly. The Bible tells us that the sword did not depart from David's house.
Right.
Because of his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah.
Right.
And this event with his sons.
Yeah.
It's another consequence of that sin.
Wow.
Highlighting that our actions have ripple effects.
Yeah.
Impacting not just ourselves, but also those around us.
It's a sobering thought.
It is.
That our choices can have such lasting consequences. But in the middle of all this drama and intrigue,
yeah,
Dr. Oswalt points out a moment where David displays remarkable humility.
Oh, yes.
So when Benaiah, the military commander, tells him that Solomon's throne will be greater than his own, you'd expect a king to react with at least jealousy,
right,
or anger.
Yeah, especially a king like David, who was a warrior,
yeah,
and a powerful ruler.
Yeah, he had a big ego.
He,
yeah,
did. He did.
Yeah.
But instead of feeling threatened,
yeah,
David responds with his genuine joy.
Oh, wow.
Praising God for allowing him to see his successor on the throne.
That's incredible.
It's a powerful example of letting go of ego.
Right.
And recognizing that true leadership isn't about clinging to power.
It's a tough lesson for anyone.
It is.
But especially for those in positions of authority.
Absolutely. It makes you wonder what could happen if David had clung to his power.
I know, right?
Refusing to step aside for Solomon.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been pretty.
Probably not. History is full of examples of rulers who refused to relinquish power. And it led to instability, rebellion, even violence.
Yeah, that's a good point. So it makes David's humility even more remarkable.
It does.
And Dr. Oswalt points us to Psalm 18.
Okay.
Where David reflects on his dependence on God.
Mm-hmm.
And he sings, O Lord, you are my lamp. The Lord lights up my darkness.
Wow.
In your strength, I can crush an army. With my God, I can scale any wall.
Powerful words.
Right. So it's clear that David understood where his true strength came from.
Yeah.
It wasn't from his position or his military might.
Exactly. It was his trust in God.
Yeah.
That allowed him to embrace Solomon's rise without feeling threatened.
Mm-hmm.
He knew God was the ultimate source of his authority.
Right.
And that God's plan would unfold regardless of his own personal ambitions.
That's such a relevant message for us today.
It is.
You know, we live in a world that is obsessed with power and status and individual achievement.
That's all about me.
Yeah. But David's example challenges us
to
find our security in something much greater than ourselves.
Absolutely. True strength lies in humility and surrender to God's will.
And when we embrace that perspective, we can find joy and peace even when things don't go according to our own plans.
That's the key.
It's so easy to get caught up in the day-to-day struggles and lose sight of the bigger picture.
It's true.
But this story reminds us that even amidst all the messy human drama, God is at work orchestrating events to fulfill his purposes.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder how much of what we perceive as chaos is actually part of a larger plan that we can't fully grasp.
That's a profound question.
Right.
And it brings us back to Dr. Oswalt's point about how God accomplishes his purposes.
Yeah.
He suggests that if Solomon had become king without any of this drama, he might have faced even bigger problems down the line.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Adonijah and his supporters but a constant threat.
Right.
A simmering rebellion waiting to erupt.
So in a way, Adonijah's ambition and David's passivity, they kind of forced the issue.
They did.
Bringing the conflict to a head and allowing for a clean slate, so to speak.
Exactly. It's almost like God allowed those events to unfold in order to clear the path for Solomon's reign.
Wow. That's a fascinating way to look at it.
It is.
It challenges our assumptions about what constitutes success or failure.
It does.
Maybe what we perceive as setbacks or obstacles are actually opportunities for growth and transformation.
Yeah.
Both for individuals and for societies.
That's a good word.
It makes you wonder, what are we misinterpreting in our own lives?
Mm.
What looks like a dead end might actually be a redirection towards something greater.
It's possible.
But what about Adonijah?
Yeah.
He challenged Solomon's claim to the throne.
He did.
That's treason, right?
It was a bold move.
Yeah.
And in many cases, it would have resulted in severe punishment.
Right.
But remember, Solomon offered him clemency?
Right, he did.
It's a display of mercy.
Yeah.
It sets him apart from so many rulers of his time.
Mm-hmm. It makes you think about the different paths to leadership.
It does.
So Adonijah embodies ambition and a willingness to grasp power.
Right.
Even if it means going against his father's wishes.
Yeah.
Solomon, on the other hand, seems to approach leadership with a sense of responsibility and a willingness to show mercy.
It's a fascinating contrast.
It is. It really is. And it raises some important questions about the nature of true leadership.
Absolutely.
Is it about wielding power or exercising wisdom and compassion?
Good question.
Is it about crushing your opponents or finding ways to reconcile and move forward together?
Important questions.
This deep dive is really making me rethink my assumptions about leadership.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. It's not as simple as just being strong or decisive.
No.
It seems like true leadership involves a lot more nuance.
It does.
A delicate balance of strength, humility, and a willingness to trust in something greater than oneself.
That's beautiful.
And that brings us to the heart of what Dr. Oswalt highlights in his lecture.
Yeah.
He says, we see in David a king who accepts being surpassed.
Right.
And in Solomon, a leader who chooses mercy over ruthless ambition.
Powerful words.
Yeah. These are qualities that we rarely see in leaders today.
That's true.
We seem to celebrate those who are loud and assertive and always striving for more.
More, more, more.
Yeah. But maybe true strength lies in the quiet confidence that comes from knowing your place, recognizing your limitations, and being willing to step aside when the time is right.
The profound thought.
It is. And it leads us to an intriguing question
okay.
that Dr. Oswalt poses about the significance of the coronation ceremonies
what?
Taking place at Springs.
Yeah.
He asks, what's the deal with kings and water?
That's a good question.
Yeah. It's a question that opens up a whole new layer of symbolism and meaning in this story.
It does. It does.
All right. So we've got these kings, we've got these power struggles, and we've got Spring playing this key role in all this drama. And Dr. Oswalt just throws out this question.
Uh-huh.
What's the deal with kings and water?
Right.
And it's been swirling in my mind, too. Like, right. There's got to be something deeper going on here.
There is. Mm-hmm. There is. You see, in the ancient Near East, water wasn't just a physical necessity.
Right.
It held this really deep symbolic meaning,
mm-hmm.
especially in a dry land like Israel.
Right.
Springs, in particular, were seen as these sources of life, fertility, and order.
Okay.
A gift from the gods.
Wow.
You know, think about it. In a harsh environment like
yeah.
that, a reliable spring
yeah.
meant the difference between survival and starvation.
Right. So it wasn't just about quenching your thirst.
Oh.
Water represented something much bigger.
It did.
This source of life and stability.
Yes.
Almost like a divine blessing.
Exactly. And remember, kings in the ancient world weren't just political leaders.
Right.
They were often seen as these intermediaries between the gods and the people, responsible for ensuring the well-being of the entire community.
Wow.
Not just in a political sense, but in like a cosmic sense.
So they were like guardians of the natural order.
Yes.
Ensuring the fertility of the land, the regularity of the seasons.
Yes.
Almost like they held the fate of the kingdom in their hands.
Precisely. And that's where the symbolism of water comes in.
Okay.
Just as a spring provides that life-giving water to the land.
Yeah.
The king was expected to be a source of life and order for his people,
mm.
ensuring their prosperity and protection.
Okay.
So by holding their coronations at these springs,
right.
both Adonijah and Solomon
yeah.
were tapping into that ancient symbolism,
yeah.
aligning themselves with those divine powers.
Like they were saying, look, I'm not just a political leader.
Right.
I'm the source of your well-being.
Exactly.
I'm the guarantor of your prosperity.
Yeah. And it's amazing how those ancient ideas still resonate with us today.
They do.
We might not think about our leaders.
Yeah.
In those kind of mystical terms anymore.
Right.
But we still look to them.
Yeah.
For stability, for guidance in times of uncertainty.
Right. We want them to be sources of order.
Exactly.
To create conditions for our communities to thrive.
Absolutely. And just like those ancient kings.
Yeah.
Our modern leaders often struggle to live up to those expectations.
Yeah. We've seen throughout history how power can corrupt.
It's true.
How ambition can lead to chaos and destruction.
Yes.
It's almost like a universal human story.
It is.
This struggle for power, the temptation to abuse it.
Right.
And the consequences that just ripple through generations.
It's true. And that's what makes this story of David and Solomon so compelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a tale of palace intrigue.
Right.
It's a reflection on the nature of leadership.
Yeah.
The complexities of human ambition.
Right.
And ultimately, that need for something greater than ourselves
oh.
to guide us.
It's like a cautionary tale for anyone in a position of power.
Yes.
Reminding us that true leadership isn't about grasping for control or manipulating others to get what we want. It's about something much deeper.
It is.
This recognition that we are not the ultimate source of life and order.
Exactly. It's yeah. about humility. It's about service.
Mm-hmm.
It's about aligning ourselves with a purpose that's bigger than our own ambitions.
Right. It's about recognizing there's a higher power at work.
Yes.
A divine plan unfolding.
Yeah.
Even amidst the messy, unpredictable reality of human history.
Absolutely. And that's a truth that can bring us comfort and hope.
Yeah.
Especially in times like these.
I know.
When the world feels so uncertain and so chaotic.
Yeah. It's a reminder that even when our leaders fail us,
mm-hmm.
even when systems break down,
right.
God is still in control.
He's still working to bring about his purposes
mm-hmm.
to redeem and restore what's broken.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like in this story,
yeah.
he uses the most unexpected people and events
right.
to accomplish his will.
It makes you wonder, what is God doing in our world right now?
I know, it's a good question.
What might seem like chaos to us could be part of a larger plan
right.
that we can't fully comprehend.
It's both humbling and inspiring.
It really is.
It invites us to look beyond the surface.
Yeah.
To seek a deeper meaning in the events that are unfolding around us.
Mm.
And to trust that even in the midst of our struggles and uncertainties, God is at work.
Well, I don't know about you, but this deep dive has been an incredible journey.
It has been.
It's amazing how this ancient story from the Book of First Kings can still speak to us today.
It does.
Offering these insights into leadership.
Right.
The human condition and the mysterious ways of God.
It really is a testament to the enduring power of these ancient texts.
Yeah.
To illuminate our present and to guide us toward a deeper understanding of ourselves
right.
and the world around us.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a question.
Okay.
Something to ponder as you go about your day.
I like it.
If God can work through a story as tangled as this one, a story filled with ambition and betrayal and even murder
right.
to establish his chosen king and fulfill his purposes,
yeah.
what might that mean for the challenges that we face in our own lives?
What opportunities for growth and transformation
yeah.
might be hidden within your own messy human story?
That's a good one.
It's a question worth pondering.
Yeah.
A mystery worth exploring.
And maybe, just maybe, the Book of First Kings might be a good place to start that exploration.
It's a good place to start.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
It's been a pleasure.
Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep discovering the hidden depth of our world and the God who created it.